All right, it is Sunday morning. We bring in the professor, Ron Wotus, and we have a visiting instructor today, the assistant hitting coach of the San Francisco Giants, Steve Decker. So first, Woe, good morning.
Good morning, Marty. It's great to be here, as always, and nice to have Steve alongside us.
Yeah, Steve, nice to have you here. Now, you are a visiting professor here, we do this Sunday morning. We take people to school, so nice to have you here.
I'm happy to be here.
As well. All right, first, getting started here. Little League World Series. I'm watching yesterday with Dave Fleming. I was up in the booth, and some kid looks like he's about 17, and they jam him, and he hits a high fly ball to left. He was out by 70 feet. Little League World Series, 40,000 people there. You see the excitement of these kids, and I don't know, is it too much? Well, you started off.
Well, you know, it's very, very popular. I know that. We have it on in the clubhouse. I mean,
really?
Everywhere you go, yeah.
Really?
You guys are watching the Little League World Series, absolutely. So it's grown to be something that is really big. And I don't know. I think it's great for the kids. I think it's a little over the top at times, you know. But I think it's great that it's televised and we get to watch the kids and watch these different countries perform and the whole process. I enjoy watching it.
What do you think of the ability, Steve, when you see something like this?
Well, one of the things being an ex-catcher, Marty, is I watch some of these little guys back there behind the plate, and their technique is so sound, their athletic ability, their reaction time, you know, at their distance with some of the kids, how hard they throw. It's really fun to watch, because especially when they take the math and they split the math and go, okay, this reaction time of a major leaguer from this distance at 95, and then they do it from, 45, 50 feet, yeah. And they have less reaction time to react to the pitch than big leaguers do. So you see such a discrepancy from some kids that have matured to the kids that are younger, and there can be a big difference up there. And one of the funnest parts for us is to always see who cries first, the one kid that strikes out and starts crying.
Usually it's the coach. Usually the coach will be crying first. But seeing this kid hit it out yesterday, it was a big kid. Dave Fleming said, this kid is just a monster. And then that team won. They got a walk-off single, and they actually threw Gatorade on the kid. Come on, please.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy watching the game, and like Dex said, you know, there's some great talent that you see, and it's very exciting. I'm not into all the antics, you know.
Yeah,
I know they get
much.
That. They get that from watching the major league players.
Yeah.
And this has been a vehicle now for the little leaguers to do it. But we all did that growing up, right?
Did you play little league?
Well, I played little league ball, but I remember being in my driveway, and we used to play wiffle ball for hours. And, you know, I was a Red Sox fan. I grew up in Connecticut. And you would emulate, you know, every hitter on the team. You know, it would be Rico Petroselli or Rick Burleson, or if it was a left-handed hitter, you'd hit from the left side, yeah. You'd hit from the right, and you'd hit with their stance. So that's what you do as a kid. But in the competition when we played, we did not take it any further than that. You know, we didn't do any of these pouring Gatorade, but that's all new, right? That's what the kids are seeing today, and that's what they're doing.
Were you a good hitter in Little League?
Yeah, I was okay in Little League. Yeah, I was okay. Most kids are that play in the major leagues, but you do hear an occasional story where a player wasn't very good in Little League. Kind of like Michael Jordan wasn't this great star in high school, but most, I think, major league players that have played were pretty good Little League players.
Yeah, and Steve, did you play Little League?
Oh, yeah. I think every major leaguer, even the left-handers, were a shortstop and a pitcher.
What about you?
So
now, you're a catcher in the big leagues and everything.
Yeah, I didn't start catching, though, until I was a junior in college. I was a shortstop, third baseman, second baseman, and I matured a little bit later. I was 17 years old as a freshman in college, so I started school young, and it seemed like in high school sports, I was always younger than everybody else, but once I went to summer sports like baseball, I had caught up and almost passed guys. So,
there's Mark Gardner, of course. Yeah, he gives us... He always razzes us as he comes by every morning, you know.
Yes.
Can't get him in here, though, Gardy.
No, he's on his schedule. He's got a big schedule this morning. He can't mess with the routine.
All right. Sunday morning, Ron Wotus with us. Steve Decker with us, the visiting professor today. Visiting lecturer, we'll call him that. Here, last time we had a visitor was Joe LaFay, I think, huh?
That's right. Another assistant hitting coach for the Giants. Joe's scouting now for us, and Deck has taken over in his position. So, yeah, that was the last guest, I think, that was
Yeah,
with
that's
us.
Right. All right. Travel teams. Now, just to finish up this Little League thing, I played Little League, and we didn't have – I mean, if you made the All-Star team, you traveled. We went from Miami Beach to South Miami. And the coach of our team was Skippy Burtman, who eventually was the coach at LSU and all that, and the athletic director of LSU. How do you like that? As a sixth grader, Skippy Burtman was our coach. So we went out to South Miami. Now, Miami Beach, if you know Miami Beach, we had dirt fields. You know, we didn't have grass infields and all that. We went out to South Miami. They had a grass infield with, you know, with the dirt. It was like a regular field. We couldn't believe it. I mean, I was afraid to walk on it. That's what life was like back then. So that was Little League for me. But travel teams are all over the place now. Now you got to pay to have your kid in it. I don't know. I sort of like the Little League experience better.
Well, you know, growing up, where I grew up in a small town in Connecticut, there wasn't any travel teams back then. But that is pretty much the way it is out here in California. I've worked a lot with Little Leagues over the years in the East Bay. I mean, from Pleasant Hill all the way up to, you know, Danville, Dublin, all the way down the corridor there. You know, Little League is very, very popular. But most of the kids in that area, in this area, they want to put their kids in travel ball. You know, Eric Johnson, who's a good friend of mine, has travel teams. There's an ex-major league player. He has travel teams. A lot of leagues open up to give kids more options to play. And I think it's good because, you know, Little League is one league for one set of players. And if you want to be more competitive, you want to travel, you want to have a better brand of baseball, because that's what happens. Some of the more talented kids want to go and travel and do this and do that. And it's there for them.
Well, interesting. All right, let's move forward here. I had Al Hrabowski. He'd probably be on the show with us today. Remember the mad Hungarian? Remember, he'd stand behind the mound and he would
loved
look down.
Him. Right? I grew up a Cardinal fan in Illinois and loved Al Hrabowski.
Yeah, just, you know, I should have, maybe the break, Raf could get. Raf, get out the beginning of Al Hrabowski where he tells where he was born and just play that. You listen to what he says about being born in certain parts of the world. But whatever. So I had a chance to chat with him. He said, look, when he first came up with the Cardinals, Ducky Medwick was one of the hitting coaches, and he started telling me all the things that Ducky Medwick used to say to him. And I started to think, you know, it's the beauty of baseball, the handoff of the generations to each other. And you guys go back a long way. Who's someone in your background? Well, we'll start with you. The older player that you got to see that maybe had an influence on you.
Yeah, well, you know, I came up with the Pirates, and, you know, the names are special when you were young. I mean, Harvey Haddix was our pitching coach.
That's a good one.
With the Pirates. Very, you know, good. He had been around a long, long time. And
you remember his nickname?
I don't.
The Kitten.
The Kitten.
Right, because Harry the Cat Brackeen was the cat. And Jim Cott, of course, was Kitty Cat. But Harvey Haddix was the Kitten.
I didn't know that. I've never called him the Kitten.
12 perfect innings. Come on.
Okay, yeah. Well, he was there. And another guy with the Pirates we had was our roving pitching instructor. And I never forgot him because he was a big, bigger-than-life character. It was Harry Dorsch, pitching coach. And he was old school all the way. And he'd really put his thumb on these pitchers and tell them how to do it. And, you know, he really stood out to me because he really took charge of his area.
What advice would he give you before a game?
Well, you know, Harry was known. He liked a few pops. Okay. So back in the game years ago, you know, a few guys, you know, beer was a big part of it. And I was in an instructional league one year, and Harry, God bless you if you're out there, he sat everybody down and he told the whole team, he told his pitchers, he said, you guys got to learn how to take care of yourself in this game. He says, the night before you pitch, take care of yourself, get your rest, 1-2 six-packs, no more. That's what he said.
Different world.
Yes, different
very,
world.
Very good. Steve, what about you? Guys who may, you know, back there has said something to you.
Yeah, you know, I was drafted in 1988 by the Giants and made it to my first major league camp, I think a year and a half later. And at that time, there was only two or three guys that made it to major league camp, very rarely out of A-ball, but I was up in the Double-A. I was hitting in the cage, and the big thing was, you know, the breaking ball, learning the breaking ball at the major league level. And if I know now what I didn't know then, I would try to say, you know, all I had to do was learn how to take the breaking ball, not learn how to hit it the other way. And I remember Willie Mays was standing behind the batting cage, and he used to come down and he simplified for me one time. He says, you know what? He said, you know, in his unique accent there, he says, just hit the fastball. Don't worry about it if you can hit the breaking ball yet. You get the big leagues hitting the fastball. And, you know, I always took that to heart, and sometimes you have to go back and you have to remember little things that people say to you when coaching players of this generation in this day. And sometimes we get a little too technical, and just to simplify it like Willie did. I mean, as smart as he was, the greatest player maybe that ever walked a planet, and he was just like, don't worry about the breaking ball, just hit the fastball.
Well, what do you say to Kelby Tomlinson, who's off to such a great start? What advice you give him?
You know, Kelby has done a lot of work in our minor league system, and I've known Kelby for 6 years, and he's a hard worker. He is a guy that you just have to make sure is online, and you say, basically say, if this guy's a mixed pitcher, this guy sits away, you got to stay in the opposite field gap, or you know what, this guy will come in on your hands with two strikes. And Kelby has a short little swing anyway, and he knows who he is as a hitter, which is great to see. You see some of these younger guys come up and take this big hack, because all you see on ESPN anymore is home runs. And he has a nice short stroke, line drive stroke to the middle of the field.
Well, was he Duffy with glasses?
Well, he's certainly a performer like Duff. There's no doubt about it, you know, and their build's a little similar in their physique, but they're two different players. Yeah, you know, you hear a little of that, you know, he's Duffy. That's because he's performing so well, and all our guys, you know, Duff, they came up, they made an impact right away, and that's a credit to the minor league system, the coaches, the managers, all the hard work that they put in, and obviously to the player, the hard work they put in. And the thing that impresses me, these guys come up here, they're not intimidated.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've seen many players over the years get to the major league level, and they're not themselves. They're not comfortable. They're a little nervous. They're a little intimidated. And maybe they don't feel they belong. And not these guys. These guys know they can play, and they go out and compete just like they were in the minor leagues.
Well, interesting. You're going to have a lot more players. I don't know how many more, because you're limited by the 40-man roster. So I don't know how many will come up. But September 1st, it happens every year. It's like watching the crop come in, the corn grow. September 1st, you're going to look around and see another six or seven people up here. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I mean, it's always been like that in baseball. And
how do you deal with it personnel-wise? I mean, it gives you a lot more options, and you got more people to corral to make sure they're ready for the game and everything.
And no doubt about it. I mean, there's a couple different, you know, sides to it. But, I mean, it's a good thing. Look, you know, you got to expand your roster. You get an opportunity to bring some guys up. So most teams get better. I mean, you're in a pennant race. You know, typically you can bring in an extra arm. There may be a situational lefty or a speed guy off the bench to help you win that close game, or a prospect that has played very, very well. And in not that you're trying to get them playing time, but you call up to help you win games. So if you're in a pennant race, you're trying to get guys that can help you win games. On the other side of it, it's great for baseball, the teams that are not in it, to get their prospects up here, to give them a chance to play a little bit. They get to evaluate where they're at in their development going into the winter, into next year. Can we project this guy to be a major leaguer? So I think that's probably the reasons why this has been set up this way. And but I do believe it would be best if they limited the amount of players that come up to the major leagues in September. And real quickly before I let Deck talk on it, for the simple reason is you're in a pennant race. And you're playing a team that's out of the race. And now they have 9-10 extra players on the bench. It's hard to keep track of them all. They can pinch it. They could bring a lefty in for every situation, a righty. And it really becomes an unfair advantage. It's really not the team that they've been playing with all year. And it makes it very difficult when you're trying to win games to have to deal with that. I think that should be limited to some degree so you don't lose a pennant because the other team's got 10 call-ups and you don't know who the heck they are.
Okay.
I totally agree with Ronnie. There should be a number limit on it. And it's kind of luck of the draw, Marty, because you know, you might play somebody early in the year and your schedule dictates, like he said, you're playing another team that's gotten better and also in a pennant race that has a stocked, you know, minor league system. So, and then you might play a team that, you know what, we're out of it. We're going to play our young guys, and it's an easy win for a pennant, you know, team. So it's really luck of the draw, and I totally agree with Ronnie. I think it's a great idea that you limit the amount of call-ups.
I think they'll do it. I mean, it costs about $90,000 if a guy's on a minor league contract. And I was listening to the Reds broadcast the other day. Marty Brenneman was saying, well, they're going to bring up seven or eight guys. Is it worth $560,000 to have these guys sitting around? And I think that's part of the issue, too. But there's two sides of it. One, the team that you're playing has so many, and also you get more people to be able to maneuver too.
Right, right. And that's where I think, you know, I think it's a good thing, you know, because, look, it's a long season. You know, the other side, the minor league seasons are over. So, you know, Instructional League will be starting. So let's say, you know, a week from now, we have multiple injuries. Well, all your other players are at home. They're sitting at home. And I think probably it was put into place with some of that thought in mind.
Didn't we have that at once?
Well, we've had situations where we lost players and we've had to go to the Instructional League and call up. Wilson Delgado was one of them. I was managing in the Instructional League. He was my player in AAA at the time. And when I was down in the Instructional League, there was an injury at the Major League level. And they call players up from the Instructional League. That's happened many times for organizations. So I think it's good that you have players available in September, because if the Instructional League isn't going on at the time, your players are at home, right? They're not playing. So I think that might have had something to do with it as well. We need a pool of players. If our guys get injured, we don't want guys coming from home that haven't played in 2 weeks. But limit the number, maybe five guys, you know, a pitcher or two, you know, an outfielder, an infielder. Keep it at five. There's ways to adjust that to still allow the players to come to the major leagues. In winter ball, they have a rotating roster. You know,
well, that's what's coming, I think, as you'll say, get your 30 and you can only use 25. And that, I think that's coming. But
yeah.
It's a union and it's money and there's a lot more involved with it other than the competitive issue. The competitive issue, we could argue and come to a real reasonable conclusion.
Right.
But then you put the money in the middle of it and everything else, then it gets...
Right. I think they can make some minor tweaks and still have the players come up, but limit the number of that roster on that night.
For that night. Okay. All right. One last thing before we go to a break. And school is in session. All right. You know, you see something different at the ballpark every night, and I'm out there watching Peavy pitch against the Cubs. And it's the first inning, and you want Peavy to have a nice, easy inning, no 38 pitches in the first inning and all that stuff. And there's a pop-up, Schwarber hits it right in between the mound and the home plate. And then they could have played the Keystone Cop, you know, theme song at this point, you know, or Who's on First. As Peavy comes in, and he's waving, and Posey's going out. Duffy's coming in. Peavy falls down. It's the Miller-Hiller Hallelujah twist that they did for the, you know, that song. And the ball drops for a double. Schwarber hustled. So, all right, school is in session. What happened? Who's supposed to make that play, and do you prepare for it?
Well, we do prepare for it. And you know what? There was some miscommunication there, obviously. And I think us being in a shift complicated a little bit, because Duffy was at shortstop and not at third base. Okay. So if Duffy was at third and Belt was – it was on a third base side of in between the mounds. So Duffy would have been there a lot sooner. But being in a shift, he's at short, he couldn't get there. And Buster, knowing that and the way the catchers are taught, as Deck could tell you, you know, he's going to go for the ball until he's called off. So him and Peavy got close together. And where that ball was, really it was the pitcher's ball. And Jake was getting ready to catch it, and him and Buster had a little contact there in the communication, and the ball fell. But typically in spring training, a ball like that, you know, the pitcher, if it's on the mound, it's not hit real high, sometimes the infielders can't get there. You just catch the ball. We want the pitchers to catch their own ball. Now, if they get called off, they get out of the way. Catchers go for the ball until they're called off. If they're out in that area on the field, usually – third baseman or first baseman, somebody's going to call them off that play.
Yeah, Steve, for a catcher, that's not easy going out that far. And Posey was going out there pretty far.
Yeah, he knew where Duffy was. And we have what we call priority positions. So as a catcher, you know when you hear the first baseman or third baseman's voice, you're off the play. Just like the shortstop. And usually what we do, the higher number has priority. So the shortstop says, I got it, over a lower number of the position you play.
Really?
Just like an outfielder says, I got it. Then that priority guy, and then, you know, everybody knows who's going to call him off, basically. And that was just one of those plays that was kind of in no man's land. And when you play a shift, and that's a new, you know, era of baseball is the shift, we didn't have a third baseman. Really, Duffy was the shortstop, and really a shaded shortstop up the middle. So he had no chance to get there. And it becomes a communication, and it's something that we'll, you know, have to look into more and pay more attention to when we are doing those drills in spring training. In the minor leagues, we're starting to shift more at AAA and AA and make it a focus, because that's what they're going to have to do. If you watch Tomlinson and Panix, they'll be in the outfield taking ground balls before during batting practice. So, you know, it's something in the minor leagues that we're going to have to address also.
Why don't they want pitchers to catch a pop-up? They're great athletes.
Well, they do. No, it's fine for them to catch it. But, you know, as Deck said, if the ball's high enough, you'll get called off by the third baseman or first baseman or the shortstop. You know, that ball right on top of the mound, it's way up there. You could have three or four guys conversion. And as Deck said, the priority guy. Where the pitcher really needs to catch his own ball is the pop-up that's not that high. And he's right. You've seen pitchers. The ball's hit, and they're looking for somebody to catch it. No, the ball's hit. Just catch the ball. And when we run spring training, Jills, we hit that little pop-up on the Ponza, just a little dead fish right to the pitcher and make sure they know they have to be ready to catch the ball.
Who's the best fielder you have as a pitcher?
Well, it's not even close. It's the great Javi Lopez, who you're very friendly
the
with.
Philosopher,
a philosopher. Yeah. I mean, he's like a cat off the mound. And that's what is really impressive is how quickly he can get to a bunt, cover first. He's like an infielder out there. Very good.
He's having a heck of a season, Steve, isn't he? I mean, honestly, when you look at the numbers, it's incredible what he's doing.
Yeah. The amount of tough outs that he gets, you know, to come in and face a tough lefty hitter and get us out of trouble is incredible.
Yeah, very good. All right, we'll take a break. This week, we saw the safety squeeze last weekend, and I'm watching it. I'm saying, why don't teams do this all the time? It's a safety squeeze. You get it down in the right spot, you cannot get the runner out from third. I want to hear what you guys have to say about that. And also, why don't people tag up from first more often? We saw it. The Cardinals did it and got the game tied up with that. I want to hear about that. As school is in session right here on Sunday morning, the professor Ron Wotus, our guest instructor Steve Decker, more coming up on the Sports Leader.